Thanks a million, Shane.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today? Hope all is good. 51551 for your texts. ray@rte.ie for your emails. And just to tell you what's coming up in a little while, I'll be chatting to Ian Ward, who is the self-proclaimed king of chemo. His videos have gone viral worldwide as he attempts to break the world record for cancer fundraising. So looking forward to chatting to him. Also, we'll be talking to a couple who bought a plot of land, not to build anything on it or to farm it, but quite literally for the birds and the bees. And child and adolescent psychotherapist and friend of the show, Dr. Coleman Nochter. He is on the show after 4 o'clock to help out with any parenting woes that you may be having. So if there's anything that you want to ask Coleman, get them into us so we can give him time to go through it and be able to help you out. And that is after 4 o'clock. So the email for that as well is ray@rte.ie. But first, did you know it's National Tell a Joke Day? One of the lads on the team spotted this online and announced it during our meeting this morning, which of course meant we all had to endure 5 minutes of everyone telling their worst jokes, like, what do you get if you boil a funny bone? A laughing stock. Oh, yes, they like it out there. OK, so the team, they're on joke duty. What does a nosy pepper do? Gets jalapeno business. Oh, yes, we like that one too. OK, what do you call a fish with no eyes? Fudge. Oh, the crickets. All right. Get your dodgy jokes into us. Get them off your chest. This is your moment. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And the team, they're like little Simon Cowells out there. They'll rate your jokes. You'll either get crickets or you'll get the adulation it deserves. Now, after a week of raucous discussion on the famous goat of Puck Fair, the festival has finally come to a close. And the Irish Sun today has an article detailing other unusual Irish festivals where, you know, if you were to imagine sitting down and maybe trying to explain them to an American colleague or to a French colleague, you'd get some very strange looks. The National Ploughing Championships in County Leash is top of the list. It's obviously the most famous, but it's still worth remembering that it is a national competition on who best ploughs fields. So that's as Irish as you're going to get. The Matchmaking Festival in County Clare is there. That gets a mention, as does the Irish Redhead Convention in Cork. The Duro Scarecrow Festival in Leash. I'd not heard of this one. It's a 9-day festival, it says here in Duro, where locals have to create the best scarecrow. Entries like Marilyn Monroe. So they had a Marilyn Monroe scarecrow, and they also had a scene of a ladies' GAA match. OK, that's definitely worth having a go at next year, I think. Bog snorkeling in County Monaghan. So this is a championship which sees competitors swim 2 lengths of a 55 metre water filled peat bog trench. And the winners, you've got fastest male, fastest female and fastest juvenile up for grabs. And the winner gets a certificate. There you go. I was just thinking about this. I've been to many, many strange and brilliant, wonderful festivals around the world. Probably the most memorable was the Turkish Oil Wrestling Festival. So they do this every year in a place in Turkey called Edirne. And basically oil wrestling, it's like over 4,000 years old. It is the national sport in Turkey. Like, it's bigger than football, bigger than soccer. And basically you've just got these big, hairy Turkish fellas, and they covered themselves in olive oil, and they wear these leather shorts called kispets, I think, from what I remember. And sure, they're all so slick and slathered with oil that they have to try and grapple with each other to turn themselves over in the ground. So it's quite the spectacle, and definitely one of my most memorable trips, I should say. Spotted this today, which I also thought was nice. It might not be as sunny as it was last week, but it's still a day for treats. So there is a shop called Lowen. It's a non-dairy ice cream shop in Stephen's Green, and they're offering a 10% discount on any ice cream that you order Os Gaeilge. So it's in partnership with Balia Ó Chlia Bogaelga, and that's an initiative to encourage more use of the Irish language in the capital. And Lowen, it's open from 12 to 5:30, and the secret words to get your discounted ice cream: Bawahlum uk the rocha, led the hole. So that brings us back, doesn't it? So give it a go. Let me know how you get on. Don't worry, though, if you're not too sure. They do have signs with pronunciation around the shop to help as well. What else? Yes, today it is the 45th anniversary of Elvis Presley's passing. And last night there's some lovely stuff online as well. They have events across the world. There was a candlelit vigil in Graceland to remember the star who changed music forever. I watched the new Baz Luhrmann film last week. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. If you haven't seen it, give it a go. Austin Butler is the name of the actor who plays Elvis. So he is brilliant. So yeah, whether you're a new fan or a lifelong enthusiast, I think let's have a little Elvis. Let's celebrate the king. The one and only Elvis Presley there. Gotta love him. David, we're getting to jokes straight away. David has texted in, what do you call a dinosaur with one eye? Do you think he saw us? Oh, we like it. What do you call a fly with no wings? A walk? Oh, Niamh, you're harsh. Catherine, my wife told me she's going to leave me tomorrow morning on account of my obsession with Wham. I said to her, well, wake me up before you go. Yay! That's from Frank in Dublin. What is a clock's favourite app? TikTok? Oh, yeah. I remember Catherine being at the Ballybunion Bachelor Festival. Oh, Ballybunion Bachelor Festival in the 90s. Wonder if it's still on the go. It was brilliant for single females. That comes in from Noreen. Oh, anybody can fill us in on that. That would be good. Let us know. All right, keep them coming in. Oh, they're coming in. Why was the mushroom so popular at parties? Because he was the fungi. Wow. Oh, guys, you are good. You like it. You like it today. All right. Okay, let me tell you about today's quiz. We are reeling in the years. Yes, we have gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we are looking for two people to come on air and answer three questions each. But there is a little twist, which you guys know at this point. But let me remind you, a short clip, which will be a little bit harder, gets you 2 points. A long clip, which should be slightly easier, will get you 1 point. So if you are brave enough to take part today, let me tell you about the prize to tempt you to pick up the phone. Our winners this week will have 2 nights stay for two people, as well as a cocktail before dining on an evening of your choice at the Botanical Restaurant in Dublin One Hotel. So designed for creative minds and social spirits, Dublin One, set on the North Circular Road, offers unique stimulating stays for guests who are hungry for more. There's cosy rooms, all day dining at the Botanical Restaurant, lazy brunches every weekend, and they have a lovely courtyard to soak up some culture in the heart of one of Dublin's most creative neighbourhoods. So all that awaits you at Dublin One, and if you're interested, you can find out more at www.dublinonehotel.com. So to be in with a chance of playing today to win that prize, all you gotta do is answer this question. Elvis Presley died 45 years ago today, but what was he also known as? Was it the king or the prince? So pick up the phone, give us a call, 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925, and we get two people up on the air after 4 o'clock in order to win that prize. Okay, back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Ian Ward is a Dubliner living in London with an amazing story. In 2019, age 31, he did a medical trial for the simple reason of making a few quid. And that changed his life forever. He discovered he had brain cancer and was given just a few years to live. So he has decided to spend every minute of his time left on this earth raising money for cancer research. He has become an online sensation under the name The King of Chemo. And here he is in action.
I may have terminal brain cancer, but you know what I say to my terminal brain cancer? You! I am going to break the world record for raising the most amount of money ever for running the marathon. And I don't need you guys to donate. I need you guys to follow, because the bigger this channel gets, the more sponsors it will get. Don't do it for me. I'm just some screaming into the cliffs of Moher. Do it for your friends and your family.
Ian Ward, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Listen, I'm sure any radio interview you're doing now, there's lots of beep, 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 beep.
No, I was literally just thinking, my God, you couldn't have picked the worst one. I swear a lot in that video.
Come here. It is so lovely to chat to you. You're just doing phenomenal things online, and the attitude and all of that. But we'll talk all about it. But first of all, take me back to the beginning and life, I suppose, before you did this medical trial, where you were living, what you were getting up to.
Yeah, so in a lot of ways, very little has changed. I've just kind of tweaked how my my life sort of goes day to day, but not by a whole amount. So I used to work as a fitness class instructor, which anyone who follows my channel knows that it's the transfer has not been too difficult in that regard. And because as a fitness instructor, you often have, I was doing it by freelance. So timetable was very variable. Yeah. And so in order to make some decent money, I did medical trials on the side. I started off doing them when I was a student. And then after that, I was kind of like, well, I mean, like, it still is really good money for very little work. And so I was doing medical trials. I was in, well, I was appealing to one, and they had a brain scan, an MRI brain scan, in before you go in, because they have to make sure that the health checks are like through the roof safe. And they were like, no, you got a brain tumor. They didn't say you can't do the medical trial. They just started saying, like, this is a serious medical condition. You got to go get that tested. And a second time.
What was going through your head at that point? Because you're literally going in trying
a big tumor.
Yeah. But you're trying to make the few quid to go out and have a few pints that night, or, you know, go out with the mates, and you get that news, like, bang.
Well, COVID got in the way first. And so that slowed the scan down, the second scan down a little bit. But then I got in and they said, all right, this is actually, there's significant growth on this scan. This is not benign at all. You need to go start and get surgery as soon as possible. He said it was better if I did it awake, because they need to poke around in your brain and test what parts of the brain are functional and what parts of the brain are just there as sort of as tissue. And I try to get rid of as much that is infected by the tumor that isn't functional tissue. So they, because I'm right-handed, the left temporal lobe affects the ability to speak, which, as you can tell, the doctor is worthy of being called a brain surgeon, because he did a wonderful job at that. It's the reason why I'm on this radio show right now and I'm not stuttering all over the place. And so they did the surgery and they were playing a basic version of Articulate with me, where they were like, okay, which of these two photographs goes woof? And I'd say, you know, the dog. And all they were actually looking out for as they were poking around in my mush was for me to hesitate. So if I said, right, the dog, that's a sign. Okay, this is a functional tissue. We'll see if we can take something away that's not that. See how much we can take away from that.
I'm with you. But what I'm actually still shocked about is you are awake for this entire procedure. Obviously, you've got to be. How do you even prepare yourself? One, you've been told this is your best outcome. You've got to go for surgery. And then you've got to do this awake. How do you actually even prepare yourself mentally for something like that?
For me, I was just like, I'm going to ignore it because it's happening. I asked the doctor, is there anything that I can do beforehand to get ready? Like, does being more fit help? Does, you know, studying meditation help anything? And he was just like, nope. And so I was kind of like, okay, well, I'm still going to go off and I'm going to start like endurance racing again. And I do meditation on and off at that point, but I was like, I probably focus on it a bit more now, seeing as how the whole concept of it is sitting still and being okay with doing nothing.
And how long from the moment that you got your diagnosis to the moment they're operating on your brain?
It wasn't particularly snappy. It was like about a month. I got it just the information I got just before my brother's birthday. And then I had the surgery one day after my mom's and 4 days before my dad's. So all in total, I got to ruin my whole family's birthdays, which is a serious victory for me. I was delighted with that. Got to absolutely wreck everybody's.
And yeah. After you got out then, Ian, and you're kind of obviously waiting for results and waiting to see how you are, like, what were you doing in the background at this time? Because I know you'd started a social channel and you were, as you said, playing your video games. Like, did you come out and start talking about this diagnosis? Did you have conversations online about it? Like, where were you at that point?
I had all these different plans where it's like, if I have to address it, I could start raising a little bit of money for charity by doing things like, hey, playing a video game, every time I get a headshot, someone has to donate a a quid, you know, make a very small amount for something that's not too difficult to accomplish, just something that a viewer could look at and have a bit of fun with. And I was going to call it Headshots for Head Cancer. And then from that, I had all these plans. And then when they were saying with the prognosis, where it's like, okay, we've had the surgery, we've had a proper test on the tumor, and which I didn't know that they would do that. I didn't think they were going to use the actual tissue to test on. So I had actually planned on giving my mother and my father half of the tumor to as their present, being like, there you go, happy birthday, I didn't forget. And but they were like, no, we need that tissue, we need to do vital tests on it in order to make sure that you stay alive. And I was like, I gotta buy them a present now. The diagnosis is a sort of an estimate that they make based on from looking at what they have. It's the kind of thing that, like, you know, you can look at the moon and scientists, I don't know how, but they're able to tell like what it's made of and all sorts of things to do that from a visual aspect. Yeah. So when they go on bike and they brought like samples of the moon dust or whatever, they were able to tell far more about like what the structure is and all sorts. So it's that sort of thing. That's the difference between prognosis and diagnosis. And the prognosis was, all right, this is stage 3 cancer, brain cancer, very serious. You need to, we had a prediction that this could be the case, but now we have 100, well, very accurate tests saying that it is. So from that, it was, I already had the idea of doing the charity stuff. So I was kind of like, all right, well, the dial has been turned up to 11. And so I was kind of like playing poker, and, you know, cancer had raised the stakes. So I re-raised.
Hold on. You couldn't have just gone from, okay, well, now the dial is raised and like now let's up the fundraising piece. Like
up
you've just been basically told that this is a terminal situation we're dealing with here. Like, who told you and where were you and who did you call and what happened?
Ghostbusters, of course. Anytime you're dealing with death, you need to make sure they know. But I was in the room with my mom was there, and they didn't actually say, they never say you've got 5 years to live. It's not like Breaking Bad. That doesn't exist. What they were saying is they started talking about, I think they mentioned something like a will. And I was like, okay, that's a red flag. How long do I have to live? And then they started saying, all right, well, we're working off of stats here that we have, but you're different. To the stats, this is my surgeon actually said that, like, you might not think this, but you are actually extremely lucky, even though you're really unlucky. Hence why I keep saying that I'm the luckiest unlucky man in the world. I wasn't the person that came up with that one. And so they were saying that you're 30. The people that come in with no symptoms are usually people who have recently retired. And so they're now looking at their health more than anything else. And so they're having checkups where they don't have symptoms for. And so the people that are doing this are twice your age. Being twice your age, being half the average age is like a huge advantage. So these stats don't really count for you. In hindsight, I'm delighted that they said that. And I really was very happy that I actually have a meeting with someone where they had, it was recorded, where they actually said, 5 years. So now I can say I got 5 years to live. I'm coming up to 2.5 now. So,
and I understand as well why you would feel like that, because you have no symptoms. Am I right in saying that? Like, you don't feel unwell on a day to day basis. Like, you have, so that must be the weirdest thing in the world, to have somebody basically say there's a counting clock on your shoulder, and like for you, it's nothing has changed since those words came out of that doctor's mouth.
Yeah. I had some moments where I wasn't able to speak properly, and then I had some seizures directly after the surgery, but they've gone away since, and I haven't had any problems. Been off chemo for a year now. And one of the most unlucky men in the world. The treatments that you get for chemotherapy during brain cancer are very mild. We're quite used to the Hollywood interpretation of all forms of chemotherapy involve someone who's gaunt, bald, like in it, barely able to hold on to the pole that has their, you know, fluids in them that as they're wheeling around. And it's a lot of cancers, then the treatment does not need to be that harsh. They're not going to damage the cancer cells as much, But that also means that you can go out on a Friday night and get langered and then wake up and play rugby in the morning and you're okay.
Yeah.
I mean, touch rugby, specifically touch rugby. I'm not going to be going around playing union anymore.
I mean,
none of that.
I have to say, I mean, and I've been following you for a while. I think you've got to be wired a certain way to have an outlook like you do. I suppose so quickly having a prognosis like you've had, because like most people I know and friends who've had cancer diagnosis, it's like you go through all of the emotions, the breakdown, feeling angry, feeling scared, all of the different emotions. And for you, it seems like, have you had that? Like, have you sat down and bawled your eyes out? Have you had those moments with your parents? Have you, like, do you fear dying? Like, where's your thinking when it comes to that?
I had one moment that I never really said to anybody because it wouldn't have brought anything. Like, I know it sounds like the exact opposite advice that everyone always says about how you need to talk about your problems. And I hate that. I don't think that one works quite well for me, because while I'm not, like, evidently I'm not afraid to talk about the problems that are in my life, I still don't think that the conversations themselves help with my happiness, because I feel like I'm very susceptible to the environment that I'm in. And so if I tell people about, like, oh, so this scan has actually shown that there is growth, that's terrifying. This is actually something that happened. It turned out that the growth was just inflammation based off of the ending of the radiotherapy, which they did mention was a possibility. They said this could be the tumor, or it could just be the tissue, because we're after finishing off our last day of radiotherapy. So there will be there's possibly some inflammation. Mm. And so that was getting that news. That was rough. Thankfully there was no one around me, so I could just literally scream, being like, I am not even going to make it to five, and never mind getting past it. And then, but then I just started acting like things were normal, and I kind of shut that idea down. And I know this is the exact thing that you're not meant to do, where it's like, yeah, put that problem away, like hide it in the cupboard and like move on with life and let it build up until it bursts and you go postal. I kept being around my friends and normality continued. And then I got my second scan and they said, yeah, no, it was just inflammation of the brain tissue. It doesn't look like it was the tumor. The thing has gone down.
And I mean, there's a lot of people that would use, like, you know, denial is a big part of, I suppose, processing cancer for a lot of people as well. Do you maybe feel that, like, there's a denial there to some degree in that? And I'm trying to be very careful here, but, like, you know, is there a kind of a sense? Do you kind of say sometimes, Jesus, is it actually happening?
I have a ridiculously filthy sense of humor. I have gotten in trouble for it my entire life. So believe me, you cannot ask questions that I would deem to be inappropriate. I kind of was there thinking like I've seen that Simpsons episode and I know what the steps of dealing with death are. It's like, maybe I am just at the that early denial phase. And it's like,
do you fear death?
No, it's just lights off for me. I don't think that there is anything to fear when it's just sort of like a sleep that goes on forever, except you're not dreaming. I think that there's nothing bad nor good from that.
You were pretty incredible, I have to say. talk to me about raising money, what you're trying to do. You're trying to break a world record. You're using your online, you are the king of chemo. You're out there recording hilarious videos. But you came up with a different mechanism. You didn't want people to just donate personally. You want to make this big and you want to go corporate.
The way I saw it was loads of people who have huge channels, they give loads of money to charity, and it's because they're popular and they've gotten sponsors and they just have money to sort of throw around. They don't actually ask people to donate. They just straight up donate themselves. And so that I was thinking, all right, well, why don't I go for that from the start? Because the concept is really easy. And I was thinking that the difficult part would be that it sounds like an absolute scam from the start. Because it's like, hey, it's like, follow this channel to find out what happens next week. Like, there's so much, oh, nonsense like that that's out there in the social media world, where it's just all tricks to try and get people to do things that will promote their channel. Follow this channel to help cure cancer. It's like, that couldn't sound more like a Ponzi pyramid scheme. And but I then was explaining that it is actually a simple form of marketing, where a big channel gets attracted by someone who wants to sponsor. So Gymshark is one of the sponsors. They're a sporting brand. And then BrewDog were the other ones.
You're trying to break this world record.
So yeah, the sponsorship, that was like that was the idea of getting them to sort of pay money. And then so I do pub quizzes with BrewDog. I've done my first one out in Dublin, which was really good success. I did like sort of charitable runs with Gymshark, and that was amazing. And I'm going to keep doing more like fitness classes, gigantic fitness classes that don't happen very often with Gymshark. And the same thing is going to happen with BrewDog. And then they also they donate for other things, just like if I make videos, they often send little donations in for that.
Brilliant.
Which I'd much prefer it that way as well, because I would like more of a long-term relationship with some sort of a company rather than just one batch of money and then there it is, see you later. I don't really like that idea. I prefer to kind of keep eroding away at the world record rather than just sort of get it in a big lump sum.
What's the motivation behind it, Ian, when you break it all down? Like, what's the motivation behind all of this charity work? It's a focus, obviously, and it's something that you can control, and something that the more you put into it, the bigger the outcome. Is that it?
It's a target. It's a number. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not trying to say that I'm some sort of like, I just want to leave the world in a better place. Like, I don't have a heart of gold. I do not like sort of, that is not my main objective. It is to be number one at something. And it's something that is meaningful. Like, I'm not saying that at the same time, I wouldn't want to, leave something behind that actually is, you know, a contribution to the world that's something of worth, rather than like, you know, I'm going to die in 5 years, so I'm going to break the world record for how many pints of milk I can eat through a small spoon in an hour. You know, like, I didn't want something that was just pointless. So I looked to the charity thing, because I knew that I would get a massive advantage due to the fact that I had cancer. So I was like, all right, if I'm going to do this based on the fact that I have cancer, what things can be made better?
It's like you are trying to break a world record for the biggest, raising the most amount of money for cancer research by running the marathon or whatever it is. And in that, I mean, do you believe, because there have been groundbreaking developments. There have been, I mean, we know with medical science how life-changing it is, like from now compared to 10 years ago, compared to 50 years ago. Do you believe, do you have hope of cure, or is that pie in the sky? Or do you even go there in your head?
Not really, no, to be perfectly honest. The other way that you could look at money for cancer research is health insurance, because the statistics say that it is 1 in 3 men will get cancer at one point in their life and 1 in 2 women. So it's like, you can donate and you can kind of think that it's, you're saving yourself, and that's exactly why I'm trying to raise the money for cancer research. It's not for other people. It's just for me, so I can cure my brain tumor.
Listen, you are a ticket, you're a tonic, and you are an inspiration. And it has been such a lovely time chatting to you. It's a pleasure, it's a privilege. The King of Chemo, everybody get following under all the different social channels, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. That is Ian's platform, and get following, and let's try and get some much needed funds his way. Ian Ward, thank you for chatting to me this afternoon.
Thanks very much for having me on. Before I go, can I just say, I know I'm saying about the donations, you don't need to do them, but if you want to, if you really want to, go to curecancerordietrying.com.
Lovely. Nice chatting to you, sir.
Thanks very much for having me on.
That is You've Got the Love from Pete Tong. And I was chatting to Ian Ward just there. And I said to him, is there a song that you love that sort of puts a pep in your step? That was it. So I wanted to play that for you, Ian. And you know what? It's not often you get to chat to somebody like that who speaks so matter-of-factly and so optimistically, having had the prognosis that he's been given, and so young as well. But you know what? As well, when I was chatting to him, it's also a reminder how powerful and what a powerful tool humour can be. he definitely uses it. He definitely has it in his arsenal and it's definitely helping him. So yeah, really enjoyed that chat with him. And his website again is curecancerordietrying.com if you want to find out more or you want to donate. All right, back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Now, in a couple of minutes, I will be chatting to a great couple who bought a bit of land with the sole intention of gifting it back to nature. So looking forward to that. First, this is Vance Joy with Riptide. Vance Joy there. Okay, we've got Brian O'Toole and Gilly Taylor in studio with us now to talk about Wild Acres. I'm dying to find out. It's an environmental social enterprise that they started in 2017 and they're here to tell us more. Great to see you. Guys,
yeah, you too. Yeah.
So, give us the background of Wild Acres and tell us exactly what it is.
Okay, yeah, I suppose
what it is currently. I suppose
what it is currently. Yeah. Okay, well, Wild Acres is a nature reserve. It's also a biodiversity education centre, and then we've got a honey farm, an eco honey farm. So, but the real focus about it is about bringing people to. Visitors to come and really learn more about what they can do in their own outdoor space, whether it's a garden, whether it's a balcony, whether it's a community centre, you know, or if they've loads of land. It's really what they can do to help bring biodiversity back.
Okay, and, okay.
So we do lots of tours and workshops and courses and events there.
You so know? Where is it?
So it's in a place called Skratna, which is southeast Wicklow, very okay. close to the beautiful British Bay. We're really lucky.
Right,
it's
lovely.
Only a few minutes away. And then we're also close to the lovely village of Red Cross. And it's a very quaint little rural village. So, and we're on
but
the Red Cross River.
You guys live in Dublin? Do you
live
in Dublin?
We live in Stillorgan, yeah.
Live in Stillorgan. So like, how did it come about? Have you always been green-fingered gods? Or
yeah,
like,
not, no, far from it. It's just been, we've always had a love of nature and just been fascinated by wildlife, you know, from an early age.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough, I grew up with a forest behind me and a river, and I was one of those feral kids that just disappeared in the morning and came back
Amazing.
When he was hungry or whatever else.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it was just, and just wildlife is just so fascinating when you begin to, you know, look at it and study it and, you know, on any level. It's just absolutely intriguing and fascinating.
So, you obviously both had a love for it, but this was a complete career change. Like,
yeah.
you bought the land and,
yeah.
like, try and describe to us, what like how big is it?
17 and a half acres.
17 and
yeah.
a half acres.
Yeah.
So what was it when you bought it?
Yeah, yeah. So so it was four fields, basically.
That was it.
Heavily grazed grassland, yeah,
okay.
very heavily grazed. And I suppose we needed somewhere that was going to be, you know, commuting distance from home, from Stillorgan. And then we wanted something that, I suppose, ideally with a, you know, it's on the Red Cross River. So that was a great advantage. We really loved the fact that it had the river. And I suppose we did end up with a project because it's like a desert for wildlife if you have four fields of really heavily grazed land. So we had to start by saying, right, you have to create the habitats to bring wildlife back.
Okay.
And ultimately what wildlife wants, the same as ourselves, food, water, shelter and a healthy environment to live in. And it needs that space rather than... So I suppose that's the first thing we did, is started creating the habitats. We've planted 11,000 native Irish trees so far.
And you know what, we'll get into that in a second, but I'm just trying to imagine the two of you sitting on your couch in Stillorgan or in at the kitchen table and coming up with this idea and then running with it. Like, what sort of time frame, what sort of research did you do?
Yeah. Well,
had you been looking at what other people had done?
We'd looked at what other people have done, of course, yeah. Mm. But we had been looking for land for quite a long time, actually. And we were just, it's like one of those things, we were lucky at the time, we just happened upon a parcel of land, and yeah, just the time was right, because straight after we bought it, actually, just even the estate agent said, look, you know, there was so many people were ringing looking for that land afterwards, and you just got it at the right time. So yeah, so it's something we've been working on for the last 5 years.
And when you said to the estate agent, like, we're not looking to for planning permission, we're not looking to build anything,
they thought
we're not
a bit strange.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it's funny, because actually the estate agent was excellent. I remember she just kept repeating, you know, this land is wet and it's fairly boggy, and it's so, as if to say, you know what you're buying. But
what a beautiful dream.
For wildlife, that sort of land is, you know, rank land, set aside land, it's perfect. So it's been fantastic. It's been hard work, you know, for both of us, and a lot of mud, a lot of sweat and tears along the way. But yeah, it's been great. It's rewarding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the key things that you were trying to achieve with this are, so as you said, it's like to education, but also just to show, like, to to that level of biodiversity and how it can be achieved and how it can be created out of.
That's the key. So I suppose when we got there, it was devoid of wildlife, really. And so sort of putting the habitats in place, it took a few years before we could see the results. But once the habitats were there, then the wildlife started coming back. So we're doing a lot of monitoring. So as well as habitat restoration, we're doing monitoring of species, and then the education piece is about inviting visitors, and people love coming and discovering things as well, that you know they'll spot things that maybe we haven't spotted, and you know, so I think build it and they will come. I mean, in relation to
I interrupted you earlier, so you've planted.
Yeah, that's the opportunity. Once you actually create the habitats, the reward is that wildlife does come back. So you know, a lot of our wild lands have been destroyed over the centuries in Ireland, and you know, especially in the last few decades. But we've seen that if you can recreate it, wildlife will return. So that's the good news. And I think it's great for everybody to know that whether it's, so we've at this stage created 12 wildlife ponds, various sizes. Some of them are huge, but somebody like this, over 2 million gardens in Ireland. So if everyone had even a tiny little pond in the back garden, it'd make such a difference. Mm. And instead of a whole woodland of trees, like we've planted 11,000, but even if you had one or two trees in your back garden, it'd make a difference, you know. Things like hedgerow, you know, rather than fences, wooden fences, you can have natural hedgerows from, you know, hawthorn and blackthorn and lovely native Irish trees and shrubs.
And we're seeing that. I mean, we were chatting about it actually during the break, even, you know, where I live, there's a lot more wildflowers in our estate down in the War Memorial Gardens in Dublin 8. They've just, the big greens that all used to be mowed, they're all being let grow for bees. And it's really interesting what you're saying, because it is about the little piece, whether you have a balcony or whether you have a small garden or a yard or whatever. There are things that we can do. And I know, Brian, you said like it's taken an awful lot of work, but actually when you think about, was it 5 years?
5 years.
What you've achieved and created in a relatively short space of time. I know it's been a long time and it's been an awful lot of work, but to have what you have now, and I was even just looking at the photos online, there are some incredible, like the birds. Yeah. Talk to me about the species of birds that you have seen that surprised you, or like what visitors have surprised you the most of them?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it's been we've logged and recorded over 60 species of bird. So on a daily basis, we'd see our lovely great spotted woodpecker, which is a fascinating story. That's a bird that was extinct in Ireland for generations, and only recently has recolonized and has spread up and down along the east coast. So we'd see that on a daily basis. And there's a myriad of different types of birds we'd see. You see, once the habitat is there, you have to start at the bottom and get the base food layer, or the base of the food chain, and get the insects there. And then you're bringing in the larger species, the mammals, the birds. Woodpeckers, kingfishers on the river, on the wildlife ponds, we've moorhens and mallards and grebes nesting. So, it's been really rewarding. And we've seen quite a number of bird species, different bird species.
And when you have kids coming down, when you've got groups of school children or students coming down, I mean, that must be a great reaction. And it must be a great privilege, I suppose, to go.
Yeah. Well, that's actually going to be hopefully from next year, we're going to do schools. So for this year, because we started in March taking visiting groups, where it's sort of 16 plus at the moment, age wise. And then from next year, we're planning to do schools. We just said we needed to make sure we had all the ducks in a row, literally, in order to make sure that everything was absolutely right, because it's obviously a different kettle of fish when you're bringing in a big school group into
So, and just in terms of financially, then obviously with groups, with people coming in, I know you do have honey, you have your own honey on
that's
the
right, yeah.
on
we the juice honey
yeah. yeah so I mean and all of that then goes back into the
into the project so we're doing
a bit more, I suppose.
So we
didn't win the lotto, so, no.
But are you still working full time?
This is your full time project. We were both in the corporate arena beforehand, so this is just something we've devoted.
So like, you both look too young to retire, but like this is
your
retirement.
This is a good day. This is after a lot of makeup.
But we decided we'd do it, I suppose, while we were still very physically fit. We wanted to make sure that we make this decision early on, and we said, right, we wanted to spend some of our savings, and this is what we love doing. We're passionate about the whole, there is a biodiversity and climate crisis on at the moment. Everybody is aware of that. And I think so many people want to make a difference. They want to do something. And I suppose this is our something, and we want to share it with as many people as possible. So even like, say, in relation to the honey you mentioned, yes, we sell our honey. Proceeds go back into the project. And so we have an event, say, on next Saturday, which is the honey tour. So it's bringing people to come and see how honey is produced in a sustainable way. So it's about, you know, the pollinator friendly planting that's happened right throughout the reserve, and sort of saying to people, look, if you manage the land carefully, we don't use any sprays or pesticides of any sort. So and, you know, everything is done in tune with nature. So, you know, an event like that, people sort of learn a lot about that. It's not just about the honeybee, it's about our other 100 bee species. And
Very quickly then, just general advice for people who are trying to be a little bit more conscious in the garden. You mentioned hedgerows there. Wildflower seeds
wildflower seeds, to be honest, are the current advice, well, the correct advice really in relation to wildflower seeds is not to go out and go to a supermarket and purchase these packs of wildflower seeds, because the problem there is just, it's become a bit of a trendy thing and a buzz thing. But the problem is that they're being brought in from abroad a lot of the time, and they can contain invasive plants, they can contain diseases, you know, to spread to our native wildflowers. So really the advice for people with gardens, even especially at this time of the year, is to let a bit of space go wild. You know, native plants, the likes of ivy is one of our incredibly, it's a top wildlife plant, something that'll flower late in the year, provide nectar and pollen for pollinators, provide habitat for birds, and berries then in late winter for birds to get through the hungry gap in January before the spring comes. So really it's just, and it doesn't have to look like the Serengeti, you know, at the back of your garden. You can cut a little path around it or a path through it.
And all of a sudden it looks like you know what you're doing. I think a lot of us are still, you know, we are still so conditioned to have the perfection and the edges.
You've got to get out of that mindset. Because, I mean, that's for, you know, wildlife needs wild spaces. And we really have to recondition ourselves to think that, you know, our back garden can't be little pretty petunias and straight edges and grass that's 2 millimetres long. Wildlife needs space, you know, it needs habitat.
And actually, we humans need that too. We actually need more wildness in our lives. Everything has become so sterile.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, but it, you know,
I love that.
Yeah, like, you know, decades ago when children were growing up, everything was about, you know, running wild and enjoying, you know, nature and being out in it. And I suppose now everything is so much more organised. And if we could all just rewild our space a little bit more, it'd make such a difference for biodiversity.
From a wellness point of view, you know.
Oh, from the wellness,
just reconnect with nature. It's just so important.
We had a workshop recently, a wellness workshop, which people just loved the fact, just doing a wildflower discovery session, going out and discovering the names and taking photos of the wildflowers in the meadow.
Brilliant. Marion Kildare, how wonderful to hear these forward-thinking people and their commitment to nature, so needed in these climate worry times. Congratulations and best of luck to this couple. Sorry, I missed their introduction. So it's Gillian Bryan from Wild Acres is who I'm chatting to. Somebody else, I tried to plant wildflower seeds last summer, but they never took. Then this year, some gorgeous flowers popped up in the crevices of our road, little bursts of joy. And I was delighted with myself.
Bursts of joy. Just, I mean, that's all nature needs, is space. And there's a seed bank, there's a latent seed bank there in the soil in all these back gardens that if you just give it space to grow, you'd be amazed what'll pop up. All these beautiful flowers, self-heal, oxeye daisy, clovers, just they're all there waiting to grow. We don't need packets of wild, just in relation to wildflower meadows, we just don't need all these packets of wildflower seeds.
All right, sorry to interrupt there. Nice to chat to you. Brian and Gilly from Wild Acres, and it's wildacres.ie. Best luck back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gara Mahagat Moira, loads of your jokes coming in here, and we're going to get to them, but I want to get to our quiz now. Because we have two people on the line. They are ready to battle it out. We are reeling in the years today. We've gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we asked a question earlier. Elvis Presley died 45 years ago today. What is he also known as? And that was, of course, the King. So our quizzers today, they are playing for a two-night stay for two people, as well as a cocktail before dining on an evening of their choice at the Botanical Restaurant in Dublin 1. Designed for creative minds and social spirits, Dublin One set on the North Circular Road offers unique, stimulating stays for guests who are hungry for more. They've got cosy rooms, all-day dining at their botanical restaurant, lazy brunches every weekend, and a lovely courtyard to soak up some culture in the heart of one of Dublin's most creative neighbourhoods. You can find out everything. DublinOneHotel.com is the email there. Now, we have two people on the line, David Mullen and Georgina Higgins. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, let me start with you, David, because they tell me that you got through first, which means you are player number one. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Walkinstown here in Dublin.
Lovely. And what are you up to today?
Well, I'm up here now minding the children now because Mammy's out to work and we're just after having a bit of dinner and everything is happy.
Ooh,
for the moment.
Good. That sounds very organised and together. What did you make for dinner? You obviously did a crowd pleaser.
Nothing fancy now, just a bit of spaghetti bolognese.
Always works. Always worked. It's a favourite in our house.
Absolutely.
What age are the kids, Dave?
I have a little girl called Maria. She is 6, and a little boy called Noah, who's 10.
Great. So you're getting ready to get back to school? Is that
happening? Yeah, they're back now in 2 weeks' time, like everybody else, I guess. And it's time to get the books and the new uniform and everything else that goes with it ready for action.
Very good. Are you looking forward to some peace and quiet?
I know, it'll be great. Now you'll miss them all the same, but yeah, absolutely. A couple of hours in the morning won't do any harm, that's for sure.
Brilliant. All right, Dave, nice chatting to you. Stay on the line. Best of luck to you. Georgina, how are you?
Very good, Catherine, and yourself?
Oh, sure. Listen, we're flying, not a bother.
Good.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Finglas.
Lovely. And are you at home? Are you at work? Or?
No, I'm actually at work.
Okay, good stuff. And where's work or what are you up to?
A cleaning company.
Lovely.
And the head office is in Finglas.
Brilliant. Okay. So who, if you were to win this prize, who would you take with you?
My husband, if he behaves himself.
Oh, okay. who's the husband? What's his name?
His name is Gabriel.
Gabriel, okay. How long have you been husband and wife?
Well, now, this is a secret.
Okay.
35 years.
We'll tell nobody, Georgina. We'll tell nobody.
We'll tell nobody.
35 years.
No.
What's the secret?
Well, he travels all the time.
Oh, great. Okay. absence makes the heart grow fonder, as they say.
That's what they say, and it's true.
Georgina and David, best of luck to both of you today. Do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Absolutely.
The best of luck, David.
Good luck, Georgina.
All right, David, as I said, you're player number one now. The year is 1982 and we're going to start at the movies. How do you feel about 1982, David? Are you thinking that you might go long or short with your clip?
I'll go short.
Go short. Right, to try and get 2 points on the board. This popular musical about a plucky young orphan hit the big screen in 1982. Can you name the movie?
Miss Hennigan, I am the private secretary to Oliver Warbucks.
It's Annie.
Yes, absolutely brilliant. Well done, you. 2 points on the board for you. Okay, Georgina, the year is 1982, obviously, for you too.
Okay.
And this is your movie question. So what do you think? Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short, please.
Okay, for 2 points. This was a smash hit film about a space traveller who needed to communicate with where they came from. Can you name the movie?
Was he wearing any clothes?
Eeyore.
No. Look.
E.T.
E.T. is the right answer. Well done, Georgina. 2 points on the board for you. Okay, David, we are back to you and it is the music question. 1982, do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short.
Okay, for another 2 points. Can you name this huge anthem or the band, we'll take the band either, who performed this in 1982?
Rising up.
Yeah, Survivor.
Yes, the Eye of the
Tiger.
Yeah, that's it. Always a crowd pleaser. Okay, that's 2 points. You're doing great, Dave. Georgina, back to you. This is your music question. What do you think, long or short?
Short, please.
Okay, for 2 points. This English band had huge chart success with this number. Can you name either the song or the band?
Come on, Eileen.
Yes. How many times have we all danced around a dance floor, a wedding, to that?
Exactly.
Okay, 4 points each. So that means you're neck and neck. David, this is your last question. It is the news question, 1982. Do you want to go for a long or a short clip?
I'll go short again, please.
Okay. This is for max points. A controversial budget failed to pass in the Dáil, largely due to opposition to the introduction of a tax on children's shoes. Can you tell us who was the Minister for Finance at the time from this clip?
It's going to be a fairly tough budget, but I believe that when it's seen in its overall context, it can be seen to be...
It was John Bruton, or John Brutal, as we called him back then.
Oh, just John Bruton. Thank you, David.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway.
Listen, well done. 6 points to you. That means, Georgina, to stay in the game and hopefully to get a tiebreaker, you need to go short, right? So you need to go for the short clip on this in order to get two points in the bag, okay? This is your news clip. 1982 saw the first leaders' TV debate ahead of a general election. Can you name this party leader?
These crucifying taxes on clothing and footwear and the proposal to remove the subsidies for milk and butter.
Is it Charlie Haughey?
It is Charlie Haughey.
Well done,
guys. Ye are on fire today. That is brilliant. So full points across the board for the two of you. That means we are going to have to go to the tiebreaker. And before you came on air, we asked you this question. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Dundrum in County Tipperary to Dundrum in Dublin? David, can you remember what you said?
Oh, I can, but I don't want to say it. 4.5 hours.
You said 4.5 hours,
yeah,
Georgina.
I was thinking it was Stephen Roach doing it.
Okay. Georgina, what did you say?
Well, I said 12 hours and 35 minutes. Yeah. But I'm cycling very slowly doing that.
The answer was, in hours and minutes, 8 hours, 35 minutes, which means, Georgina,
well done, Georgina.
You
well
are
done.
Our winner today, so fair Hooray! Play to you.
Hey!
Well done.
Hard luck, David. Listen, back to the kids.
I'm sorry about that, David.
Not at all. You deserve to win. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well, listen, Dave, we're going to send you 2 Ray Darcy Show mugs out to you, and we'll get them in the post this afternoon. Georgina, congratulations. That means you are off to the Dublin One Hotel. You don't have a whole pile to travel.
No, I don't.
You could walk there. But you're listen, isn't it fantastic? New property. And so Gabriel will now have to be on his best behaviour.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Listen, enjoy it. Well deserved. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Lovely afternoon. Nice chatting to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, before we go to break, we've got time for a few jokes. Are you ready now with your yays and your nays? Are we up or are we down? Okay, now this is from Matthew, age 6. On National Joke Day, where do cows go on their holidays? Moo York. We love it. Kevin in Westport, did you hear about the guy who invented the knock-knock joke? He won the Nobel Prize. Yeah. Oh my God, you're generous out there. My husband asked me to stop singing Wonderwall to her. I said maybe. Crickets. Yeah. All right, keep them coming in. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That was Little Green Cars, and my love took me down to the river to silence me. Okay, I'm joined in studio by child and adolescent psychotherapist Dr. Coleman Nocter. He is here to answer your parenting questions. If you have anything you'd like to ask him, you can email the show, ray@rte.ie. How are you, sir?
I'm good, yeah.
Yeah?
Not a bother, yeah.
Good, good, good. You've been enjoying the good weather?
I have, yeah. Hiding in the shade. Enjoyed it now. I'm enjoying the nice little cool breeze as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, as always, there's a huge amount of queries in. We can only ever get to a couple of them, so I'm just going to dive straight in. This one is huge, and this one really resonated as well with me. I was looking for advice about how to help my 12-year-old daughter. I noticed about a year ago that she was really starting to become aware of her appearance. It was the usual stuff that I would have expected. She started to be more involved in choosing clothes when we went shopping, started spending a little longer getting ready, all that kind of thing. It seems to have escalated a bit more this summer. She went to a camp and made a couple of friends who were about a year older. She came home talking about how they were allowed to wear makeup breakup and could she start? I am totally against it, and there have been a couple of arguments in the morning when I noticed her trying to get out of the house with eyeshadow on. Me and her dad are both in agreement that we don't want her to wear makeup until she is 16, as we would prefer her to have a childhood and not to grow up too fast. The real worrying part of this change of attitude, though, is her eating habits have been affected. She now won't eat a lot at dinner time, and I've noticed her lunches coming back untouched from her latest camp. I tried to have a heart to heart with her about being healthy, but her response is that she wants to lose her baby fat, which she really doesn't have, and would like to be skinny to wear crop tops. I feel that the horse has already bolted. I don't want her to be so worried about her appearance. She's only 12, and I never imagined that I would have to worry about her not eating her food. She was always such a great eater. What can I do?
This is a really good question, a really interesting dilemma, because it's something that a lot of people are struggling with. And this is a kind of a classic starting point where there's a potential crisis here and you need to manage it. I wrote about this about 3 weeks ago. I was talking to a few youngsters and they talked about the teenage disco, and they were talking about getting ready for that. And these girls are first and second year, and the
shoes, 12, 13,
about that age group. Yeah, and they're talking about, you know, that the getting the right dress was like a fashion show and they all needed to dress this way. But what they were describing was a real discomfort in wearing the clothes, but they felt pressure from their peers, not from social media and all these other things, to wear these things. So if you wore jeans to the school disco, you could be banished. So there was this kind of dilemma that they had to dress much older than they were. And they talked about the more makeup you wore and the more flesh you showed, the older you looked. Now, it wasn't for purchasing alcohol or anything like this. It was just this kind of, and I've had concerns for a long time that childhood is shrinking, that children are getting younger, older, and you know, the tans and the makeups and the nails and all these things. And I remember my own father saying, you're not going out in that.
It's everywhere.
But it's the body consciousness of that is that these children are children, and so they are developing, their bodies are developing as they should. But what I've worked with youngsters with eating disorders for 25 years. About 80% of my caseload has always been youngsters with eating disorders. And maturity fear is a big issue there. Mm. So these children, they're coming from sixth class and they're wearing GAA trousers and tracksuits. And now they have to wear these really tight leggings and all these sorts of things. And they just feel incredibly conscious, but they feel they have to wear them because they'll be excluded if they don't. And so the idea is that, and again, this pressure from their peers. And I can remember one child being ostracized because she wore a swimming suit instead of a bikini to a swimming trip and was kind of ostracized for that. So I talked to parents and parents are going, it's out of control, but we can't do anything about it. If she doesn't wear the older stuff, she gets excluded. And there's no kind of answer to it. But where the maturity fear comes, you feel overwhelmed. When you feel overwhelmed, your food becomes something you can control. Mm. So when you're overwhelmed, the food is a signpost to the problem. It isn't the problem. Mm. And so in this girl's issue, she's just trying to grab control of something that she can manage. I don't know what the advice is, because I've said to parents, you know, you need to kind of dress your children according to their ages and not according to what they want. But the pressure from the peer group, and it's like gaming, the first child to get the over 18 game puts pressure on everybody else. Yep. And so parents are saying, well, I can't send her off to the disco looking different to her pals because this is where it's at. But I'm it's not a judgment call. I'm not shaming. I'm saying about the body conscious issue here, that if you wear unforgiving clothing, then you're going to become more conscious of your body. If that's a source of discomfort, you're going to try and manage that. And food restriction and overexercise is a way in which eating disorder tells you how you solve things. Is eat less, move more, and all your problems disappear. And for children, that looks like a very convenient way of coping with feeling overwhelmed. Mm. And for this girl, as she's restricting her diet, as she's binning the lunches, these are all kind of early red flags that there's a potential problem. Now, I would say to this person, don't concentrate on the food. The food is the signpost, all is not well. It's the other stuff. It's whatever she's feeling in terms of being overwhelmed from that peer group or that pressure to look older, dress older, whatever it might be, and she's worried about falling behind. Mm. Have a chat with her about it as the answer. And I genuinely don't have an answer to this, Catherine.
Do
you be the one person whose dress is different from everyone else and get ostracised, or do you just go along with it for the sake
of it? It's such a dilemma. And I mean, my girls, and I think about where the world is going to be in 10 years time or 15 years time when they're teenagers. But, you know, even reading that, the fact that she is trying to get out of the house with makeup on, there's already, and you're saying open the channels of communication, have that, you know, and this mom clearly wants this to be the case. She wants to kind of have these open conversations. But there I can just imagine there are so many parents out there listening to this who are going through the same thing. And it is how you navigate it, because, yes, you can have the conversations, but if the peer pressure is still coming from where it's coming from, how do you change it?
And I don't have that answer. I really wish I did. But I think in terms of on individual cases, the child thinks if I drop the weight, all my problems will be solved. And that's not the issue. That's not going to answer it. So you need to demystify that issue. The issue here is about talking about what it feels like to be overwhelmed, what it feels like to be under pressure, what it feels like to be forced into being a way that you don't feel comfortable with or that you feel you need to be with and your parents are not letting. Describe that dilemma and try and get her to help her with that. Just forcing food into her is not going to hear her issue. So the child is saying to you, I'm struggling here.
Yes.
And it's, but the struggle is not with her weight. The struggle is with her life.
With the pressure, where
things are going.
Yep.
And that's where she needs the help. But I certainly would be keeping an eye on the diet and making sure that she's having enough. If she doesn't wait to lose, you can get into a red zone quite quickly physiologically. But maturity fear and growing up is a big issue. And if we cause children to get too old too quick, we're going to see more and more children falling into this
gap. All you want to do is say, be yourself, be unique, be individual, be you, and all of those things. But I mean, that's...
And again, other parents have said to me, it's very hard to buy clothes that are not that way. You know, you go into things and it's all crop tops and belly tops and things like that. And for 8-9 year olds. So the issue is society's not making it easy for us.
That does come from social media, Coleman. That does come from...
It comes from a cultural pressure for sure, you know. But again, I think the adults in the room need to manage this a little bit better. And maybe if you're the one who's buying the clothes for your daughter who's putting pressure on someone else, maybe that's the issue we need to manage, because it is a problem. And the girls I spoke to, these were 13-year-olds. They were really overwhelmed by this. And it really struck me to the point of talking about it, which, again, as a middle-aged guy, it's not my forte to be talking about teenage fashion, but when it comes to making someone body conscious and having an impact,
And you've had many conversations and many discussions, and you've seen how it can escalate.
Yeah, and this is coming for a number of years now, Catherine, to be honest. But the adults in the room need to manage this a little bit better and help children to feel less overwhelmed.
Okay. Our 10-year-old son has spent a lot of the summer alone and I am worried. He had a bit of an issue with bullying in school last year. He's not as sporty as the other lads in his class and at times would prefer to hang out with the girls instead. He'd be like that at home too and would have happily played with his sisters and their friends in the park beside our house. The gang of lads who were involved with bullying were all brought to the office with their parents in the middle of the year and after that they left my son alone. However, this summer he has totally retreated into himself and despite invitations from the kids in the area to join them, he just stays in his room and reads or paints. I'm happy for him to be creative and he doesn't seem unhappy, but I'd love for him to mix with the other kids a little bit more. He used to be really sociable and would join into anything that was going on, but now he is just quiet and alone. Is there any way of encouraging him to come out of his shell a bit more?
Yeah, the answer to this is one that we always champion the extrovert. I'm going to champion the introvert here. If he wants to be with other people, if he feels he'd love to have more friends, then he may need support with that. But sometimes children are happy enough in their own community. I remember working with a kid for ages and he turned around to me and says, you want me to have friends? I don't. I'm perfectly happy with the way things are. And sometimes we can kind of socially demand that children, you know, he's retreating into himself. Maybe he likes that. Maybe that's the way he is. But if he desires friendships, then it's about being creative, trying to find areas that he can find his tribe. If he likes the creative side of things or a little bit left of centre, he's not sporty, then find those channels for him.
And I suppose just thinking about it, like that parent obviously knew there was an issue. So if there was a bullying issue, like before that, this child was very sociable and loved hanging out. And since that, he hasn't.
Yeah, and again, as teenage years, as you get older, your behavioural change
could be related to that, but it could not.
Double check that at first. Do you want to have more friends? Do you feel you're missing out on something? Or are you lonely? Because sometimes we assume that people are lonely and want more friendships when in actual fact they might be okay with that. And that's fine. We need to allow introverts to be introverted. It's not about having everyone look to be like us.
Good message. I'm writing this after getting another foot in the face from my 5-year-old son. Oh, I can totally relate to this one. He point blank refuses to sleep in his own bed and I'm exhausted with the lack of sleep. He comes in every night without fail, each time with a different excuse. I'm thirsty, I'm too hot, I've had a bad dream, my nose is too itchy. We try and get him back into his own bed, but generally after a couple of hours, we give up and he gets in beside my wife, but will flail about all night. It's not affecting our sleep and work days. It's not only affecting our sleep and work days, but it's also coming between me and my wife's relationship as it's affecting our intimacy. Please help.
As long as there's an option, there's a problem. don't have an option of him going into the bed. Do you know what I mean? So you need to stick with it. It's laborious, bring him back every night until it stops. But as long as there's an option to stay there and he wakes up there in the morning, it may well continue to be a problem.
And he will come up with excuses till he's 23.
For sure. To give that listener some reassurance, there are very few 23-year-olds who still sleep with their parents. They will grow out of it.
Okay, just bear with it. Keep going. That's the advice.
It's the hard work. Keep bringing them back.
All right, Coleman, as always, such a pleasure to chat to you. And that is all we've got time for this afternoon. John Cook is next on Drive Time. Have a wonderful evening and I'll be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.